In association with iFanboy, welcome back to Word Balloon, the comic book conversation show. This is John Suntress. Today, a question and answer session with Robert Kirkman. Now, Kirkman, as usual during San Diego, made a lot of news, introducing his Skylark imprint. Of course, we've seen the debut of his new miniseries spinoff from Invincible, Guarding the Globe. And at the end of October, Halloween, we're going to see the television version of The Walking Dead. Everyone's excited about that, but I want to go back to this question and answer session that Robert had with Word Balloon listeners all about the craft of comic writing. This is kind of a lost episode of Word Balloon. We recorded this last August, and what with moving and transferring computers, I had lost this file for a while, but I wanted to get back to it because Robert answers a lot of questions about starting out in the comics business. We discuss the merits of creating a series Bible versus a story-by-story approach. Is there a definite end for Walking Dead in the back of Robert's mind? And he talks about character development and how he plots out stories. It's a very interesting session, and he gets into a lot of interesting writing subjects in this edition of Word Balloon. Today it's brought to you by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where you'll find a wide variety of trade paperbacks, hardcovers, absolute editions, essentials, omnibus editions, all at reasonable rates of 35% or more off the standard retail price. Plus, if you place orders of $50 or more, you get free shipping from InStockTrades.com. Case in point, some of the Robert Kirkman books that are on sale, Invincible Volume 13 with Ryan Ottley. The trade paperback standard retail price is $16.99, but at InStockTrades.com, it's just $10.70. And speaking of The Walking Dead, all of the trade paperbacks for The Walking Dead are under $10 at InStockTrades.com. Regularly priced volumes of $12.99 are available for $8.18, while $14.99 trades go for $9.44. All these deals are waiting for you if you go to InStockTrades.com. Let's move on to some questions I have from the Word Balloon Peanut Gallery.
Please do.
Leaf Insect Man wants to know if there's any information on Killraven.
Rob, I believe, just wrapped up issue 3 of 5 and is starting issue 4. Which I guess is moving on at a bit of a slow pace, but, he's working on it, and he's got 1,000 other things going on. I just saw online today they put up his Deadpool story for Deadpool. Is it 600 or 900?
900, I believe.
900, but, he does a lot of stuff, and they've... Killraven is considered an evergreen project. Is
sure.
that what it's called?
Yeah, I would say so.
Where, it doesn't really have anything to do with the current continuity and could come out whenever and not be spoiled. And so they're letting him take his time with it. And from everything I've seen, it looks pretty awesome. So I'm guessing it will be out in 2010.
Okay. Very cool.
And when it comes out, everyone will be like, why did Robert go back to Marvel? I thought he said he wasn't going to work at Marvel anymore, and now he's gone back. What a sellout, because that's what they do every single time something I do that I did back then is finally put out.
With regards to your status as one of the Image big guns, do you still feel as excited as you did when you first started there? Has it been more stress or work than you expected or less?
No, I don't know. I mean, sometimes I go, oh, I'm not really doing anything. And then sometimes I'm like, oh, whew, what a rough week. I didn't have to do all this stuff before I was made an Image partner. But I don't know. I'm definitely as excited, if not more excited, than I was when I came on, just because I know all of the stuff that Image has planned for, the end of the year and 2010. And it's a lot of cool stuff. It's going to be, 2010 is going to be a big year for Image. So, I'm definitely more excited just because I get to be, behind the curtain seeing what's going on and seeing what's coming down the pipeline. So it's cool stuff.
Are you involved with, greenlighting books or anything like that beyond your own stuff?
To a certain extent, yeah, just because Eric Stevenson will be like, here's a pitch. It looks pretty good. What do you think? And I'll either be like, I think it's awful, or I'll be like, I think it's awesome. There's really no in between. But, I guess there's a chance that if you've had your Image book turned down in the last year or so, that may be my fault, but I'm going to say it's not. So.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Dave0923. Mr. Kirkman, I'm a huge fan of your work, and I recently caught up on Invincible and read both Tech Jacket and Capes, and I really love them. And I admire you a lot for being a successful creator-owned creator. Right now, I'm a teenager who wants to make comics. I write and have some friends who are great artists. I've been informed that next year for my graduation present, I'm going to get to go to San Diego, and I want to go in as an inspiring creator and businessman as well as a fan. I'm working with each of my artist friends on a 40-page story of all different genres that live and die in a big one-shot issue so that we have the options of continuing with new stories at a later date or just leaving that single story alone. And I want to collect them together in a graphic novel and bring them to Comic-Con to show off my stuff and show the world that I'm ready to create. I'm young, but I want to start now. And I know I'll have a lot of stumbles and falls on the path to becoming a comic writer, but I just want to get started. Does my plan sound all right from your perspective as a successful creator?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. As long as you don't expect... and I'm not saying it's not going to happen, but as long as you're not like, oh, my 40-page book is going to, you know, be published and, you know, take the world by storm and blah, blah, blah. I mean, if you look at that as practice, it's an excellent plan, just because I think that, you know, starting out, the thing that is best for you to do is to make comics. Don't write scripts and try and get them published by Marvel or DC, because it's very hard to do that if you're unknown and have never done anything. And, you know, don't come up with, I mean, because I've seen people do this, don't do a creator-owned comic and then just start writing scripts. I've seen people come up and be like, oh, I created this thing called Leaf Insect Man, and it's... a callback, you know, it's going to be 80 issues long, and I've already written 60 issues, and here are the scripts, because that is a gigantic waste of time. The best thing for you to do is to, you know, write a script, find an artist, get that stuff drawn, see how the artist draws from your script, you know, change the way that you work based on that, you know, try and make a comic and see if you can do it on your own and see how it turns out, and if, you know, you can get people to critique that, take that stuff to heart, and just try and hone your craft. How young did this guy say he was?
Said he's a teenager. He just says, I'm young and I want to start now.
I could be 19. Nobody. We don't know.
Right. You know, he just says, I'm a teenager.
He could be 13. But, I mean, you know, that's definitely the, you know, doing anything. A 40-page comic, a 22-page comic, a 16-page comic, I think is always the best thing to do. And if he has friends that are artists, that's, you know, extremely lucky. I was lucky enough to meet Tony Moore in the 7th grade. And so when I was coming up, I had a guy that was, you know, of professional quality that I had known since I was a child and, you know, could trick into doing comics based on my scripts. So,
yep.
You know, that really helped me out. And so... you know, the tough thing about being an up-and-coming writer is that you have to find an artist somehow. And through internet ways is pretty difficult, just because everyone is trying to do that. And so it's hard to kind of stand out in the crowd of people randomly emailing artists on the internet and saying, hey, would you like to, you know, do a comic with me? Because, you know, it's hard for an artist to know whether or not a guy's legit or not when he doesn't know a name. So it's a very... getting in as a writer is a very tough business, and so I definitely say do your best to find an artist to put that shit together.
His second and shorter question is, what other artists would you like to make a new creator-owned comic with? You're working with some awesome guys right now. Ryan, Jason, Charlie, and Corey are all fantastic and brilliant, but is there anyone else you've always wanted to create something new with? And obviously you just mentioned Mark and you on Pilot Season.
Yeah, no, I'd love to actually do something with Todd McFarlane and Drew. That would be fun. I'd love to get around to doing something with Larson or Liefeld, creator-owned, with Liefeld. I would love to do a book with Sal Buscema.
Wow, that'd be great.
I think that Sal Buscema is awesome. I would love to do a book with Amanda Connor. I think that she's really good.
Oh, very cool.
I'd love to do something with David Finch. I think that, you know, he's by far one of the best, you know, action superhero, you know, guys working in the business right now. Frank Cho.
Cool.
Would be pretty good.
You guys would be a great team. I could see the humor in that and take advantage of Frank's hot women. I think, yeah, definitely. I like that.
We'd probably do a porno comic.
Yay. Hey, man.
I mean, to be honest.
Nobody since Chuck Austin's done a decent one, so why not?
But no, I mean, there's, you know, I'd love to do a book with Jeff Darrow. I could sit here all night going, oh my God, if I could just do a book with this guy. Yeah, I actually talked to Jeff Darrow at Wizard World Chicago one time. He was sitting at the, I don't know, it was like on the corner of a booth, like not even with his whole booth, and he was, I don't know, I mean, he's goddamn Jeff Darrow, and you could just walk up and talk to him and buy original art and stuff, and I don't know, it was really cool, and he was a really cool guy. I was kind of shocked. It always surprises me that, you know, a lot of times it seems like the most talented, you know, the guys that should be arrogant assholes are always like, oh, hey, you like my work. Wow, thanks. I'm so shocked. Like, I don't know. I remember meeting Jeff Darrow just being like, oh, you're Jeff Darrow. Like, what's going on? How you doing? And he was just like, oh, yeah, hey, what's going on? When he should have been like, you know, stand over there and bow and step
security
to the left and you can get your autograph and get the hell out of here.
But beat it, big head. Nice.
Yeah. I went to San Diego this year and left her with a baby, so she's not too thrilled with me right now. Actually, we're thinking about getting a divorce. It's really
we're nice.
In a rough patch. But
well, maybe as the daughter gets a little older and a little more mobile, you guys can like come to Chicago or whatever. And
she has gained a lot of weight as a baby.
Okay.
This daughter of mine.
Okay.
And I the thought of her being mobile anytime soon is not not realistic. Because I tell you, her legs look like they're wrapped in gigantic white tires.
Little Michelin baby, nice.
Yeah.
Aww. What's her name?
Fatty. No, her name is Mary Jane Princess Leia Boba Fett Kirkman.
That's a great name. But she's only going to keep the Boba Fett part, of course.
Yeah, we call her Boba.
Man, I can't wait till she's 16. Yeah, it's really Boba. I know. I'm sorry. It really is. Where are you going? Dad, no one's going to date me with this name. Shut up, Boba Fett. Get in for dinner. Clint P. wants to know, will Wolfman get collected in the hardcover format like Invincible and Walking Dead?
Yes.
Very cool.
Yes, I'm still on the fence on whether I'm going to do two hardcovers that have, because it's going to be a 25-issue series, so it'll either be, you know, 12-issue hardcover and a 13-issue hardcover, or one big 25-issue hardcover. I think right now I'm leaning towards just one big 25-issue hardcover, but we'll see.
Brown Bear 76.
Here's the thing about Image Comics that's awesome.
Please.
I like hardcovers.
Yes.
And most of the hardcovers I do because I would like to have a copy. You know, like,
sure.
What is Robert doing a gigantic slipcase Invincible hardcover for? He just did two other hardcovers of Invincible, and why? Because I want a copy for my coffee table, you know?
There are private binders, Robert.
So, well, I'm, you know, why do that? You know, I could actually sell a few. But, yeah, so there will be a Wolfman hardcover because I would like to have one.
Very cool. So. Brown Bear 76. I really enjoy your Marvel team-up run, and I have to say I still chuckle every time I think of Spidey and She-Hulk complaining about being carried by their armpits. Great stuff. What is the process you take when you're going out to create a new series? When you started Invincible, did you make a Bible of all characters and a map of where you were going, or did you do it all on the fly?
First of all, thanks for the compliments on Marvel Team-Up. I had a lot of fun on that book, and sometimes I forget I wrote it. But, kind of by the seat of my pants. I mean, I don't do the whole, like, flow charts and, you know, especially with Walking Dead, like, I have long things mapped out, and I know different stuff that I'm going to do. I don't necessarily write all of that stuff down. Early on in Invincible and Walking Dead, because they both started, you know, 6 months apart, mm-hmm. relatively the same time. My TV just started playing.
No problem.
I had my DVR paused.
Oh, no worries.
Because I was watching Final Destination on Stars while my daughter fell asleep on me.
I understand.
My daughter makes me watch all kinds of movies that are considered lame, but I watch them and I'm like, what the heck? Undercover Brother is awesome. Like, why do people say that's not a good movie? It's totally great. So, you know, you get trapped under a sleeping baby and you'll watch anything. I actually set Final Destination to record because I was like, I was watching it because she had fallen asleep on me and I was like, this is actually pretty good. I'm kind of digging this. So, anyway, I like to think that I love movies so much that I'll just watch any movie, but I am starting to think that maybe my taste in movies is kind of awful. I don't know. I mean, I don't know. The Final Destination, that's considered like a bad horror movie, right?
Yeah, well.
People don't. I don't know.
I don't know.
They, okay.
They keep
kind
making it. Somebody's watching them.
Whatever. Anyway, refresh me. Where was I?
You were saying Invincible and Walking Dead both started around the same time within 6 weeks of each other.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, as I started doing more and more issues, I started worrying that I was going to forget all the things that I planned on doing, and so I started a couple files on my computer that were called, like, Invincible Notes and Walking Dead Notes, and I would just write stuff down every time I thought of it, like, you know, when Invincible's dad comes back, he could do this, and so I'd just have, like, a little paragraph about that that I'd go in and write in this file so I didn't forget it, and I did that for about 3 weeks. So I was just like, I don't want to keep doing this, I'll just keep it in my head, and so, for the most part, I just kind of keep stuff in my head, which is a little dangerous. But when I create a new series, I usually come up with a bunch of cool bits and, figure out who the characters are, and then I start writing. And as I write, I just kind of fill in the blanks. A lot of times, I'm writing a new book right now that hasn't been announced yet, and I don't like coming up with normal people's names. I usually go through my spam folder and Frankenstein names together, you know, because you get a wide variety of names that you wouldn't necessarily think up on your own because you didn't go to high school with people with that names.
Okay.
And with those names. And so, Eugene. I never knew anybody named Eugene. That's a cool name. Coming out of the spam folder, going into Walking Dead. But I highly recommend that. It's a great way to get names. But when I'm starting out a book, like, I'll just go, nah, Jim, whatever, you know, and then I'll be like, I'll just change that later when I'm lettering. Comics are a very, they're a very long step-by-step process. You write a script, a guy draws a script, you get it lettered, and then you got to look at the lettering. There's like 9 different times when you can change the script before it actually goes out the door. And so my mode of operation is usually, I get it done to fix it later. That's how I do comics.
Interesting.
And that's how I create new comics.
Jacob Pound, ladies and gentlemen, asks, Robert Kirkman, I'm a fan of your work. Any plans to revisit Capes, Tech Jacket, or Reaper?
Reaper was a book that Cliff Rathburn, the guy who does everything on every book I do, he inks Invincible and tones Walking Dead and colors the covers, and he inked an issue of Wolfman, and he drew the first few issues of that recent Brit series.
Mm-hmm.
He hired me to write that book for him. That was actually his creation, and so as I understand it, he is working on a sequel to that right now, but I may or may not be involved in that. If he wants me to, I will help him script it, but if he wants to do it on his own, he's more than welcome to do that. So I don't know if I'll be involved, but there's a sequel to Reaper coming out. And then Capes and Tech Jacket were the other two.
That's right.
I have Tech Jacket written, because I wrote a little bit past issue 6 when I ended it, and I would like to go back and make sure that's not awful and eventually do something with that. It's just a matter of finding time.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a second arc for Tech Jacket, mostly blocked in, and I think a lot of the 7th issue was written before I wrapped everything up. So I'd like to go back to that. It's just, who knows when. And then Capes, I don't really know. I don't really have any plans to go back to Capes at this point. Capes was originally going to be the sister book to Invincible. I was kind of hoping that that would keep going for a good long while, because Capes is all of the characters I created in high school. And when I created all those characters in high school, I had all kinds of stupid stories I wanted to do with them. And they're not entirely lame, I think, maybe. I don't know. And so I kind of wanted to get around to doing all that cool stuff. And so I have other stuff planned for Capes. I just don't know when I would get around to doing it. So maybe. And I do apologize for rambling on every one of these answers and probably saying too much stuff.
Not at all.
I apologize.
Robert, honestly, not at all. This is great. And honestly, I appreciate the time and thought you're putting into some of the questions about writing, because I find a lot of word building people really want to know about that stuff, so it's good that we're talking about this.
I'm worried that I'm just going, what, comics, and then stuff goes. Like, I'm going to listen to this thing later and go, oh, my God, what did I say? So
you want to know the
anyway.
Truth? Here you go.
Carry on. Yeah, exactly.
That reminds me, by the way, I wanted to ask you, when we were talking about possible artists that you'd want to work with, are there any other old names besides Sal Buscema that you would like to work with?
I'm not 100% familiar with Golden Age guys, just because I've gone back and read as much of that stuff as I can. But, like you say, my comics reading stuff starts in like 1989, and then I've worked my way back as best I can, but I'm not 100% familiar with everybody. But, I'd love to work with Jim Steranko, just because he's goddamn Jim Steranko.
Sure.
Not that I think in a million years he would ever want to do anything with me. But,
have you met him?
I have stood next to him. I actually stood next to him for a few minutes in San Diego. He was standing out in front of the Omni, and it was awesome because he was wearing the suit that the Joker wears in The Dark Knight Returns when he crashes in on the David Letterman thing. Like, it was that damn suit, and I was like, that's the coolest suit I've ever seen.
A nice double-breasted suit, which I know he wears a lot.
Like, he looks like he's walked off the set of a movie, like, at all times, and it's not even in a ridiculous way. He looks like the coolest guy in the world.
Absolutely.
Like, if someone were to be mugged in front of Jim Steranko, he would pull out a knife and stab them in the neck or something and then just walk on. I'm actually, like, a cool, like fighting dude. Like, you know, that's what I do normally. Like, he just looks like a really cool guy.
I'm with you.
But Steve Ditko, I actually tried like hell to get Steve to do an Invincible cover for me. His address and corresponded with him via snail mail, which is quite awesome because he totally responds in handwritten letters. And he's a super nice dude, but just flat out was like, not really interested in doing a cover for you, which is fine because he's goddamn Steve Ditko.
Sure.
I'm shocked as hell that he even responded back to me, but I wrote him a few letters like, no, really? Can you please? You know? And we chatted a little bit, which was a lot of fun. I actually should probably write him again. But I'd love to do anything with Steve Ditko if he could actually, if he wanted to come back and do comics, I would work with him in a minute. So.
Does he say what he wants to and what he is doing now? Forgive me for asking.
Well, he's doing that, what is it called, the package or whatever. It's kind of comics, it's kind of commentary stuff. It's not really necessarily sequential stuff, but as far as I know, he's actively working on that stuff. I forget the name of the guy that's publishing that stuff. But, he's still doing work and it's still coming out. So,
all right.
Pretty neat.
Jacob Pound has one other question, and I'm confused by it. Do you work entirely...
Well, then please ask me the question so that I can be confused as well.
Join the confusion. do you work entirely digital when creating comics with your artists?
The artists don't work digital. Actually, most of my artists don't work digital at all. Cliff Rathburn inks things digitally sometimes, and when he works on Invincible, he's actually... printing out scans of the pencil pages and inking that, so he's not actually penciling the physical pencil board or inking the physical boards. So I don't really work with anybody that's like Alex Maleev or I don't know. There's a number of guys that work entirely digital these days. I think that shit is awesome. But as far as my working process, I work with a pencil and paper a lot. I plot comics on paper, and I write myself notes on paper. I keep a notepad with my laptop. I actually keep a notepad in my back pocket, and I'm always jotting stuff down. And then I have a binder that I keep like typing paper in that I plot comics on. And so I do a lot of framing sequences and working things out on paper before I ever type it, so that most of the time when I'm typing a script, I'm really just kind of fleshing out my outline and, you know, typing it out in script form. So I'm more transcribing the written out shit than I am actually writing on the computer. And that's not always the case. Every now and then I'll sit down and bat out a few pages without ever working on paper. But, you know, as far as the actual, like, physically typing and whatnot, that's all digital. But
okay.
I still do a surprising amount of stuff on paper.
Nick Maynard, 85. Why not just flood the market with as many three-issue minis as you can in order to get as many fat option checks as possible?
Because I am not a whore. Despite saying in San Diego that I was a whore. You've actually said that at a panel. But anyway, that doesn't interest me. I don't really do comics to get option checks. I do comics to do comics. I know that sounds like I'm going out of my way to say that to, you know, because that's what I do and I don't want people to know that or something. I don't know. And it's not even like that would be a cool, like, it's not even an easy thing to do, you know. Like, I could do 100 three-issue miniseries and maybe two or three of them would be picked up, and then I'd be like, man, I did 97 extra three-issue miniseries for no reason. You know, it's not like it's a guaranteed thing that everything gets picked up, you know, so I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a foolish thing to do something just because you think it's going to be picked up as a movie, because at the end of the day, comics are a lot of work, and if you don't enjoy the comic that you're working on and you're just doing it as a movie option or whatever, you're kind of doing a lot of work for, you know, a pretty big risk, because, you know, optioning something is one thing, and then, you know, making money off of the option and it actually being made is a whole other thing entirely.
Sure.
So it's not really worthwhile to do that. I know, I mean, honestly, it's kind of an absurd thing to think that anyone does a comic just for an option. I know that that's an accusation that's thrown around quite a bit, but even movie people that come in to do something that they want to exploit as a movie later, you know, like, they had to like comics in the first place to think of doing it as a comic, and, you know, if they work on it, they, you know, they have to do work on it, so that's one thing, and, you know, you kind of have to be into comics to want to do it, and so, you know, maybe they do want to later exploit it as a movie, but they do want to do that comic in the first place, and it doesn't make it any less of a comic book for them to want to do it as a movie later. I don't know.
Right.
That's a weird thing. Like I say, man, I'm all rambling answers tonight. This is going to be the worst episode of Word Balloon ever.
No.
At least the worst one I've ever done.
Not at all.
But,
editing is our...
And also, I hate three-issue miniseries. I think they're hard to do. It's like, three issues? Like, what? It's a beginning and a middle and an end, and you get one issue for each one of those things. So...
That's interesting.
Four issues, at least. I mean...
What about even shorter stories? Like an eight? Like, could you do an 8-page story if you had to? Or,
well, I've done 8-page stories. I don't.
Okay,
like to,
that's true. Yes, you have.
Yeah, no, I've done. I actually just did. I just did an 8-page story for Outlaw Territory Volume 2, that will be coming out at some point in the future from Image Comics.
Wonderful. Yeah, I loved the first one.
Yeah, I like that volume quite a bit.
Me too, man.
And the guy who's putting that together, whose name escapes me right now because I'm a giant dick.
Is his last name Woods?
Yeah, and that's not helping me.
I know, and I'm sorry, because a friend of
mine... I want to say Michael Woods, but I don't think that's right.
I do think that is right, actually. So let's,
oh, really?
Outlaw Territory is a very cool first anthology. I think it's a great product, so nice going.
Yeah, and the lineup he has for the second volume is pretty spectacular. That's all I know about it.
Cool.
I can't list. I know that Sean Phillips did a story, and that's awesome. And I believe the Eminems are doing a story together, Stuart and Catherine.
Cool.
Good stuff.
Very cool.
The second volume is going to be sweet.
Here's another one. Jester from O-Town, Kentucky. Which town in Kentucky would O-Town be? Is it actually O-Town?
O-Town. I have no clue.
All right. Jester says, local Kentucky fan here, Robert. I was on my Xbox 360 the other day and saw the Invincible Motion comics. I downloaded a few, and I think I'll start picking up the early issues in trade. I was wondering if wondering how the idea of doing a motion comic came to be. I also want to say that Destroyer has been awesome.
Thank you. I like Destroyer, too. It was a lot of fun. MTV called me and said, hey, we're doing these... we're doing this thing called a motion comic, and we'd like to do that. We'd like to use Invincible to do that with, or something. I don't know how they worded it. And I was like, "What?" Because I mean, I don't think that was the first motion comic, but no, I mean, I know it wasn't because the people that did it had done like a Ultimate Spider-Man motion comic like years before that. But I had never heard of one, and so I had no idea what they were talking about, and I agreed to it. Because I was like, oh, whatever, that could be a cool thing. So yeah, I mean, that was pretty much them going, hey, you know, we want to do this neat thing, and me kind of looking it over and seeing how it all worked and agreeing to it. So I didn't really do anything as far as bringing that about.
Goost from the Netherlands. I was wondering if Robert's days are any different now that he's an Image Big Shot. Is there still the same time for writing? And I was wondering if, being where he is, a co-owner of a company, does he look at differently at some decisions that are made? For example, the prices of comics.
I'm on the phone a little bit more, but for the most part, it's not. You know, I have to sit in on more meetings when I go to conventions, and you know, I'm asked about stuff more often than I was before I was a partner, and I do have a little bit of a hand in approving books, but you know, for the most part. And please don't send me your submissions. You know, let's go to Eric Stevenson. He's going to handle that stuff. You know, he'll contact me and be like, I don't know, I'm on the fence on this one. What do you think? So, I mean, I have a little bit of a hand in approving the books. But for the most part, it doesn't really interfere because I'm all the way in Kentucky. So a lot of the day-to-day business stuff is handled in the Image office, and the partners aren't really brought in to handle that stuff very often. So... you know, I'm free to do my own thing, just like Todd McFarlane and Mark Silvestri and Eric Larson and Jim Valentino are. So, you know, doesn't really cut into my day too much.
But, okay.
There is a little bit of added responsibility.
Now, you're very quiet, just so you know.
Sorry, there's a little bit of an added responsibility there, but for the most part, I'm good to go. Sorry, I'm slinking down in my chair and falling asleep.
Are you boring yourself? I'm sorry.
No, I'm the only guy in the world that can fall asleep while talking about something.
Nerdsner, I love your work, although I admit I haven't read much of your Marvel stuff. The first indie non-Big Two book I ever read was Battle Pope, and that's what got me to search out and buy more indie books, as well as your other work. On to the questions. Since you've done both creator-owned books and some Marvel books tied into extensive worlds, how is the process, limitations, or styles different? There's a nice essay question. Yeah.
Well, the process is different because of this, and the style.
Yeah.
I'll just start rambling and hope that I cover it all by the end of it. I think he's saying that, you know, Invincible and Wolfman and Brit and Tech Jacket and Capes and all those books all exist in the same world.
Yes.
So to a certain extent, you know, I'm tying in and trying to keep continuity straight and doing all that kind of stuff on my own stuff. And I also did that at Marvel. And so I guess he's asking if there's a, you know, process to that or whatnot. The difference is, when I was at Marvel, I'd call up Tom Brevoort and go, yeah, what the hell, man? What do I do? Like, what's going on? Who's this guy? What's he do? And he would tell me. And then on my books, I kind of have to keep it all straight myself.
Or call Benito, yes.
Yeah, and call Benito. But, but yeah, that's the big difference, I guess. Plus, the Marvel stuff is infinitely more complicated. And, you know. And also, it was funny because when I first started at Marvel, I got all the masterworks.
Okay.
You know? And I was like, I'm going to read all this stuff, and I'm going to know who these guys are, and I'm going to be up on continuity. And then I would realize that is impossible because no matter how many Impossible Man stories that you read, you're never going to get the one where they gave him a mustache. You know, like, oh, well, you forgot that in Luke Cage number 16 they gave him a mustache, and so he's got a mustache now. Like, what the hell, you didn't read that one? And it's like, oh crap, what the the hell? So so I quickly realized that all of those Marvel Masterworks I purchased are only going to be read for enjoyment. But don't tell my don't tell the IRS that.
All right. What are your thoughts on doing creator-owned work with someone like Image versus doing creator-owned work somewhere like Vertigo?
Basically, as I understand it, the Vertigo deal is not entirely creator-owned, so that's the big difference. A Vertigo creator can't take their book anywhere like they could at Image. They're not completely free to, they don't own it outright. They can't shop it around to any movie studio they want. Warner Brothers has a piece of that.
Mm-hmm.
And this is all, I think public knowledge. I don't know. I mean, it's definitely creator-owned in that they're doing, their own creations, and they're kind of, running wild and doing their own thing. But there are certain limitations to doing a book at Vertigo that you don't have at Image.
In one of the Battle Pope trades, it seemed that it was hinted that there would be a new Battle Pope series coming out. Is that still a possibility, or are the stars not aligned for that?
I had originally wanted to do New Battle Pope right after I republished that color series.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of ran out of time. And at the end of the day, do I really need to be doing more Battle Pope when I could be doing a new creator-owned thing or something I'm more excited about and whatnot? And so what I've come up with is, I started my career with Battle Pope, and now I want to end my career with Battle Pope. So when my career is in the toilet and I can't do books anymore and nobody's buying my comics and I'm completely washed up, before I hang myself, I'm going to go and do Battle Pope for a little while so that it will bookend my career nicely.
Sabir Pirzada. I have no idea what that means, but that's his name. Kirkman. Do you think comics will ever go completely digital? Well, we kind of talked about that, and actually you even gave a timeline as to when it will happen. He says within 50 years.
I'm thinking maybe. I don't know. I'm thinking that that's the soonest it would happen. What I was saying with the 50-year thing is that I'm not one of those guys that's going, oh, print is dead.
Right.
It's going to happen tomorrow. We're all going to be, digital signals beamed into our brains. It's the end of the world. Not one of those guys.
Do you think indie comics have a greater potential to get non-traditional readers into comics because they're more diverse in genre, or do you think Marvel and DC have the advantage of getting non-readers into comics because of their movies?
I don't even... that's like a... I don't know. Yes. They both do. Because the thing is like the average guy going into Barnes & Noble, I think would have an easier time reading and understanding something like Blankets as they than they would reading Amazing Spider-Man volume 36.
Sure.
Which doesn't exist, because the average reader going in to buy a Marvel or DC trade in a Barnes and Noble, like, have you thought about like what they see on that shelf? It's like, oh, it's Punisher this and Punisher that and Punisher that and Punisher that. Like, where do I start and what is this about? Like, there's 75 different kinds of every graphic novel, and it's kind of hard to, I don't know. I sound like I'm criticizing now, but it's a difficult undertaking for a mainstream book reader to try and, come into that world. And so, to a certain extent, yeah, I think that an independent small press kind of thing would be a much easier, Essex County. There's a tree on the cover. That looks interesting. I'll totally read that. I think that's, whatever. So that could bring new readers in of a certain age or whatever. But I think that Marvel and DC almost have a responsibility to bringing in the younger readers just because of the market saturation they have with their characters, not just with the movies, but the awareness of their line of characters. It is just something that not anyone, nobody else can compete with that. I certainly don't have any characters that are anywhere remotely as familiar to the mass audience as their characters are. And so I think that they would have a fairly easy time bringing in new readers, if that was one of their main efforts. And I know that it's a huge, you know, important thing for them, but I don't know that they're doing all the things that they could be doing. But they're busy. I don't mean to sound overly critical or anything, but,
sure.
You know, I think that they have I think that they, more than anyone else, have the power to, you know, completely change everything for us as far as the comics industry goes. And I think that, you know, their digital comics initiative and motion comics things and trying to branch out that way is definitely a step in the right direction. So I think they're doing okay. But it kind of falls on their shoulders is what I'm saying.
I get you. What would you suggest to be a better use of time and money for an aspiring writer? Now, this kind of dovetails into that earlier question. They all do, don't they? Yeah. Creating several separate five-page comic pitches or one full-length complete comic?
I think several separate five-page pitches, because that's what I did, actually. When I started out, I did Battle Pope. And then once I did Battle Pope, I started pitching stuff to everybody. And I pitched a book called Dead Planet around to people, and I pitched a book called... Science Dog, which ended up being a character in Invincible,
mm-hmm.
and I pitched Tech Jacket, Invincible, Walking Dead, Brit, Capes, Cloudfall. Every one of those was a five-page comic, and that was it. And I didn't do a lick of work on that stuff until they were picked up, which is why you don't see a Dead Planet comic or a Science Dog comic, because I never got past that initial five pages. And the reason I recommend that is because, you know, if nobody wants to publish your comic and you're not willing to publish it on your own, then doing anything past that initial pitch is kind of a waste of time. And, you know, I think that it's, you know, it's much easier to get a foothold in the industry if you keep moving on to the next idea, the idea that people might be more interested in, instead of holding on to the one idea that you think is the best, because you may not be right. There's an alternate dimension Robert Kirkman that's working on
Science Dog
issue 65 right now.
Yeah, Science Dog and everything. Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, that guy's miserable.
Dead Planet rocks.
Yeah, no, people just don't understand me.
Zach Goyette. Hey, John and Robert. Do you see an ending in sight for Walking Dead?
You know, sure, I know what I would do to end it. I don't plan on doing it anytime soon.
Okay.
I don't have, like, a definitive ending planned. Like, I don't have, like, a, you know, Preacher ending or a Sandman ending or a set issue number or
mm-hmm.
anything like that. But I know how I would wrap things up right now, today. I reserve the right to be able to change my mind as time goes on. But, you know, I know how I would like to end things. I don't plan on doing that anytime soon. It's not necessarily just because The Walking Dead's popular also. Like, it's not like, oh, you know, as long as that book's selling, I'm going to keep doing it. It's kind of like that. But, you know, I'm enjoying it, which is the main component. You know, like, I'm really kind of having a blast. And I got into comics to be able to do long, never-ending, you know, stories. Because those, you know, it's my favorite comic, you know, like, oh, you know, this story goes on forever, and, you know, there's always a new issue every month, and these characters keep going in different places, and, you know, that's what I got into comics to do. I didn't get into comics to tell six-page or six-issue stories or, you know, whatever. And so to be able to do that on The Walking Dead and Invincible, but, you know, we're talking about Walking Dead here, I can't conceive of ever going, oh, yeah, I'm done with that, you know, I've had enough. So, you know, if it ever hits a point where I'm not enjoying myself, I will totally step away from that book, because I don't want it to end on a bad note by continuing it after I lose interest in it just because it's popular and then it's starting to suck. So I'm not going to do that. But as long as I'm enjoying myself, I'll keep going.
Oren Lupin. Hi, John and Robert. I love Invincible, and Ryan Ottley's art is amazing in it. You should give him a raise. Also, Adam Eve's death almost made me cry with how tragic it was, bloody and beautiful. But, of course, as we know, since it was written, she's back with a bigger rack. 1% bigger.
1%.
My first question is, any chance for a Brit series, or if not, is he going to be a main feature in the new Invincible book?
He will be as much of a main feature in the book as a lot of the side characters are. Brit will be popping up from time to time.
Any plans for a new book? If not, can I suggest The Misadventures of Alan the Alien?
I sure do like Alan the Alien. There are certain characters like Alan the Alien, the Immortal, Omni-Man, Robot, that I feel like their stories are so integral to the Invincible series, and the side characters make the comic as interesting as the main characters do, and blah, blah, blah.
Okay.
I wouldn't want to pull that character out of Invincible because I feel like I'd be losing a pretty important piece of the book. For instance, Invincible 66 and 67, which I mentioned earlier,
yes,
focus largely on Alan. I could have just as easily made that a two-issue Alan the Alien miniseries, but then I feel like readers of Invincible would have a hard time going, oh, well, I read Volume 10, and then I go and I read this Alan the Alien miniseries, and then I come back and read Volume 11, and, you know, that could be lost on some people, and it's kind of hard to keep track of that kind of stuff, and so... writing a sprawling 100-issue epic, I've read comics for a good long time, and I know the things that frustrate me, and, you know, knowing that exact right moment to stop reading your Mighty Thor back issues and going and reading that Baldur the Brave miniseries frustrates the shit out of me, you know?
Sure.
And so I try to avoid that as best I can.
With Invincible's world getting bigger, with Mark, his dad in space, Wolfman, Brit, etc., do you see a chance of your world expanding big enough that you may invite other writers to play in your universe with one of your established titles or a new one? Obviously, you've done this before with Adam Eve and Brit.
Yeah, and I'll probably continue to do so. If Brit had continued, I would have... I'm just going to say it. I mean, Brit wasn't quite as... Brit wasn't the success I would have liked it to be. Had Brit been an enormous hit, I'd be doing three, you know, Invincible spinoff books right now.
Mm-hmm.
With different writers, just because, you know, it's a big universe and I have a lot of characters that I'd like to see, out there doing stuff. And, you know, it just didn't work out there, I'll be blunt. But, I plan on doing it again very soon. It may already be in the works.
Jimmy F., 1982. Kid Omni-Man has got to be the greatest name for a character ever. I just love how he won't go by any other name. Any plans for any solo adventures with him upcoming? A two-issue mini like you did with Adam Eve, or a solo issue of the series?
Yeah, before I answer the question, I gotta, I'm gonna pause here.
Sure.
Because I know he's listening, when this is actually played later, and
okay,
he'll be waiting for me to, come out and say it, but... whatever, it's not really that funny for anybody other than him. I gotta throw Corey Walker a bone, because I was gonna call that guy, I think I was gonna call him Omni Boy, and Corey was like, no, Kid Omni Man. And I was like, Kid Omni Man, I think it's awesome because it's, got kid and man in the
absolutely
name, so that's what makes it awesome. I was thinking of Kid Miracle Man, and I was like, it sounds kind of like Kid Miracle Man, and I don't want people to be like, oh, you totally ripped off Kid Miracle Man. But in the end, I was like, it's been a while, and it's not like Marvel's going to be bringing that character back anytime soon, so people have forgotten him. I was like, I'll do it. It'll be great. And I love the name, and I think it's goddamn brilliant, but I can't really take credit for it, because that was all Corey Walker.
I like him and Mark together. I think he's a lot of fun. I think their dynamic is very cool to look at.
Yeah, I mean, moving forward after issue 50, I wanted to try and change the dynamic of the book a little bit. And I didn't really, honestly, looking back from, 65 to 50, I didn't really do as much of it as I wanted to. But I wanted to kind of try and make those issues like the early issues of Invincible, where Omni-Man was Invincible's mentor and kind of like turn the tables and, kind of show how much the character has grown over the first 50 issues by making Invincible the mentor to Kid Omni-Man.
Sure.
I did a little bit of that, but I had a lot more stuff I wanted to do, but, plans change as you're writing the book. But that guy had another question in there, right? And we didn't answer it, did he?
No. Well, he wanted to know any plans to do any solo adventures with him coming up.
I didn't really get to go too far into my Invincible plans because we got sidetracked. But after the two-issue
yes,
Corey Walker, Alan the Alien stuff, we come back to Earth, and there will be a lot of stuff going on with Invincible and Kid Omni-Man, and Kid Omni-Man's going to get to do some cool stuff. His name will be changing as he gets older. That's a bit of a spoiler. So enjoy that name while it lasts. But, you know, because he ages at a rapid...
accelerated rate, yeah.
You know, yeah. So, I mean, you know, if you're paying attention, the fact that there's a time jump while we go off into space for two issues means that, you know, there may be some differences in Kid Omni-Man when we return in issue 68. I'm not going to give anything away, but he may be a little older. But anyway... big stuff going on with Invincible and Kid Omni-Man, all ramping up to the Viltrumite War that will bring us through 75 and past, and will be a, well, I mean, it's going to be another one of those big, you know, earth-shattering, climactic fight things that Invincible has every now and then. So, Viltrumite War, big stuff. And, you know, Kid Omni-Man will be a big part of that.
Very cool. Big Poot.
I like that you just dove right into the screen name and didn't even say, I've got another question from Big Poot. You actually just said Big Poot out of nowhere.
This is pretty much like how the Bendis tapes goes, man. I just I usually just roll on at this point in this conversation.
So the next one's going to be named I Farted, and it'll just be like, I'll end the question, and you'll go, I farted.
He wants to know what it's like to work with Todd McFarlane on a personal level and a professional level. Is it fun?
I'm from Kentucky, and yet Todd McFarlane is the one never wearing shoes. It's an odd thing. Okay. I mean, honestly, I've never met someone that doesn't wear shoes as much as Todd McFarlane doesn't wear shoes. And so there's the little, I don't know, it's the little things with Todd. Because Todd is brilliant, you know. Todd's Todd McFarlane, you know. Todd's the guy that got behind schedule on Spawn after the Spawn Batman crossover, and they came to him and they were like, "You know, Spawn 19's going to be returnable. You're going to lose a bunch of money." And he went, "Oh, okay. It's issue 21 now, you know. Like that's business brilliance, you know." And honestly, like, I'm not even making fun. Like, he did issue 21. People did complain, and it seemed like a crazy move, but Todd was the first one to ever think of it. It was a cool thing, and then it gave marketing importance to the issues that were missing, to where when he finally went back and did them, it was like this big marketing push, and it was a big deal that it was, oh, the missing issues. And, you know, it all worked out and was cool. And I know that when I went into the store and I was like, oh, man, is Spawn 19 out? And the guy was like, no, Spawn 21 is, you know? I was like, what the hell? But at the end of the day, that stuff's really cool. And, you know, I don't know. I'm in awe of Todd's, you know. People make fun of him for buying those damn baseballs. But he bought those baseballs, and he put together a traveling museum built around those baseballs that went from stadium to stadium. And while he was doing that, he got to know all these people in the major leagues and got to do the toys for, you know, the McFarlane toys or whatever, the baseball toys. And so people are like, oh, yeah, Todd McFarlane, he's that crazy guy that spent $2 million or however much he spent on those baseballs. And it's like, no, Todd McFarlane's the smart guy that spent $2 million to build up a multi-million dollar, like, sports figure line. Like, what is wrong with you guys? You know, you're not paying attention.
Very good.
You know, it's Todd's, you know, I don't know. I sit at that guy's feet when I fly out to Phoenix, and he tells me all about, you know, comic stuff. And, you know, he's a smart guy. So, I don't know. It's a lot of fun. But the whole time he's telling me, he looks like the biggest bumpkin redneck in the world because he's sitting there with his frayed blue jeans and his you know, whatever shirt he wears with his feet just hanging out. And I can't I sit there and I'm looking at his feet going, like, why don't you put on some goddamn shoes?
Is he at least wearing socks?
No! Ew. No, it's his feet blowing in the wind, man!
Yikes.
And he's in, like, you know, the TMP offices are really nice. You know, nicer than a lot of comic book companies' offices and, nicer than a lot of movie studio offices that I've been in. They're real nice. But Todd's walking around like he's, you know, getting ready to run through a field or something. It cracks me up. So all I have for you is Todd doesn't wear shoes. That's how bad this interview has gotten.
No. I think this is very interesting, and I think, yeah, especially his ideas and stuff. And I think you're right. I think comics is too small a stage for the ideas that Todd McFarlane has on a regular basis.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like it's over people's heads at some point, you know? I don't mean to insult people or anything. It's over my head, you know? I'm like, oh, really? Like, he seems to be thinking three steps ahead of people a lot of the time.
Sure. Very cool. Kai is the next person. The Kai. From San Jose, Costa Rica. Hey, man. It is what it is.
I know. I'm going to stop talking about it because I hate it when I listen to Word Balloon and people make fun of it. It's like, okay, we get it. Screen names are funny. Keep going. I'm trying to listen to my comic stuff. Like, what the hell? I'm going to stop talking about it.
Well, he's our final question, so that's okay.
Oh, daggone it. Okay.
he's got several questions, though.
Okay, good.
Onion rings, French fries, or wedgies, first of all? I'm going to get rid of the tiger beet-like questions first. So which is your favorite side dish?
It depends on the restaurant. You know, sometimes onion rings are really good, sometimes they're not. I'm partial to steak fries.
Sure.
Not real partial to wedges.
Okay.
I don't really like the wedges so much.
Root beer or cola?
Usually cola, but after a long stretch of drinking cola, I like to change it up and have a root beer.
Man, you're a deep guy.
I don't mean to answer these so seriously.
No, but that's fine.
But these are the things I think about all day long.
Let's see. Then he asks, which characters from Invincible, Astounding Wolfman, and Brit would you like to take apart and maybe dedicate a mini or something to them? I really love all your books, but for example, with the massive cast that Invincible alone has, there have been some characters that don't get much attention. Out of the top of my head, I would easily dig more Black Samson, Robot Monster Girl, and Bulletproof.
Yeah, Bulletproof especially, I really feel bad about just because, Bulletproof is a name and a costume. Like, he really hasn't done anything in the book. It's funny that he would mention him as, you know, like, oh, I'd really like to see more of this guy, because that guy hasn't done crap. But, yeah, I feel real guilty about that. And so we'll probably be doing a lot with Bulletproof very soon. Black Samson, and not just because these two guys are my black characters, and every now and then I get crap for, you know, you beat up 75, you know, white guys in your book, and then a black character gets beat up, and I get a bunch of letters about, you know, how I mistreat black characters and how I might be a racist and all this stuff. So, you know, I hate to even bring that stuff up, but these are the kind of fan letters I get sometimes. But, I feel bad about Black Samson, too, because he was all cool and had, like, all kinds of stuff going on with him when I introduced him earlier in the series, where he had lost his powers and was kicked out of the Guardians of the Globe and had built that, you know, had that robot suit made so that he could have his powers back. And then I haven't really done a lot of interesting stuff with him. I don't know. I'm not perfect. I lose track of these guys sometimes, too. So I would like to do a lot more with those two characters especially. And I do have a lot of plans for Bulletproof, so we'll be seeing a lot more of him. One of the characters that's in all of my books that I really like and would love to do more with is Donald. He was kind of, God, how was he introduced? He was Britt's handler,
yes,
and Britt, and then kind of became Cecil's right-hand man at whatever that group's called, the Global Defense Agency.
Mm-hmm.
And so he's been in, you know, every book that I've ever done, all the superhero books, and he's just a normal guy in a suit, but he's also a robot.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know, I think it's kind of neat. And, I mean, if you read Brit, you know, there's the first three 48-page one-shots that I did of Brit. The first one's all about Brit. The second one is mostly about Brit, and there's cool stuff with Donald in the end. And then the third one's, like, all about Donald. And so that book was slowly evolving into a Donald book. So if I hadn't stopped doing that book when I did, the fourth one would have been all Donald. But
that's funny.
Yeah, I really would like that guy, and I'd like to do more with him. And then with Wolfman, Mecha Maid, which is another robot character. But we're actually doing a lot with her in the book leading up to the end, so you'll be seeing a lot of her coming up. So I'll be scratching that itch on my way out.
Very cool. And also, someone asked earlier, and I kind of glossed over it, the way you did the Walking Dead compendium. Do you see yourself doing an Invincible compendium?
It is a little bit more difficult with Invincible, one, because it's in color, which isn't really that much of a hurdle. But the problem with Invincible is that the issues aren't necessarily made to be butted up against each other like the Walking Dead issues are. You know, every Walking Dead issue that I write, I end the issue knowing that eventually the first page of the next issue is going to be right next to the last page of the previous issue. Mm-hmm. And so I always write it so that you can read it seamlessly, which I've had people actually complain about because when they read the trades, they can't tell when an issue ends and when a new one starts. But screw them. So anyway, when I do an Invincible compendium, I have to have pages in between each issue. And because I'm very strict with what pages fall on the left-hand side and what pages fall on the right-hand side, I have to put in two pages. Otherwise, I mess up the pagination. And so I would have to put two pages in between each issue. And that adds, like, you know, if you do a 48-page thing, that adds, like, 1,000 pages. I don't know what the math breaks out to be. But it makes it harder to do Invincible. But I'm doing the math and trying to figure out how it's all going to work out, because I do want to do a compendium of Invincible as well. So,
very cool.
I don't know. I don't mean to ramble. I'm trying.
No, you're fine.
There are problems in doing an Invincible compendium that I didn't have with doing a Walking Dead compendium.
All right. Well, that would be it. He says thanks to both of us for the hours of entertainment you've given, and keep up the good work.
I'll do my best. How about you, John? Are you going to keep up the good work?
I'm phoning it in from now on. I hope you enjoyed it, Kai, because starting with this interview and moving downward, yeah, from now on it's half-ass all the way.
Good to know, man. Good to know. It seemed kind of half-assed, but
you know,
I wasn't going to say anything.
Yeah, my attention started dipping when I was talking to Patton Oswalt today, and it only dips lower now that we're talking. Not at all. No, Robert.
Was it a name drop? What was that?
It was, because it was a busy day in a good way. Honestly, I was so thrilled that everybody said yes, but they all picked this week, which is fine. I'm having a very nice problem of having a lot of interviews set up with a lot of good people, and I'm glad that we had an opportunity to talk, and I've been meaning to have you back, and was very glad that we can do this now with this interesting point where, you know, all the established books are, and with the new product that's coming out, so this is all win-win.
Exciting stuff. Exciting stuff ahead. Not as exciting as talking to Patton Oswalt today.
He was cool.
I should call him and see how that went, because I know Patton Oswalt.
Oh, man, will you say nice things about me? Because, we did okay. I think I hit a double or a triple. I don't think I hit a home run. We were okay. But I'll be honest with you. Yeah, I was, I wasn't Chris Farley. It wasn't remember when, but I don't know. He was cool. He was very interesting, but he was also kind of low-key because he was talking about his new movie.
Oh, his new movie, the big fan thing?
Yeah, have you seen the trailer for that?
Yeah, the trailer looked amazing.
I agree, man, and I know you're an old movie fan as well, and this, I've been...
Taxi Driver?
Yeah, Taxi Driver, King of Comedy, I even said The Gambler with James Caan in terms of, I just like movies like this that kind of show, even specifically, the dark side of sports and obsessive people. And I think, you know, again, because you see that, I saw the initial image, and I'm like, uh-oh, wacky comedy with Patton Oswalt. And no, this is a very interesting, serious movie that, especially coming from my background with sports talk radio, I'm like, this sounds really cool. And I know guys like the guy that he plays.
Yeah,
so.
I saw this coming when I was watching Ratatouille. I was like, this guy's going to be the next Robert De Niro. I can smell it.
Yeah, I think if someone says, you're talking to me, yeah, what's your problem? Nothing.
Oh, but yeah, you do the sports radio stuff, so you're aware of the existence of these folks.
Well, and also, I told him, I'm like, I can't deny a little schadenfreude in terms of, God, all the shit that comic book fans take for years, and it's like, yeah, guess what, sports fans? You got your own little special group of people as well, and here's one of them.
Yeah. Well, the national media doesn't cover a sports fan convention every year.
No.
And sports fans don't speak in Klingon.
Well, no, but I do. I used to love coming to work on Wednesdays when I'd work at, like, Sporting News Radio Network and, you know, have a stack of new comics. And a guy with a fully decked out in his football jersey and, you know, matching team hat had no problem telling me, dude, you like that crap? And I'm like, what's, you know, Sears catalog did you just walk out of? And I'm the one with the problem? Interesting.
That is true. But see, the problem is that guy could probably beat the shit out of you.
No.
No? No? Don't think so?
No. No. No, it's just kind of that, you know, oh, this, well, your shit sucks. I'm like, you know, why don't you enjoy your fantasy football? And you have a good time.
Role-playing games are lame.
Exactly.
I'm going to go play fantasy football.
Dude, you know it. And I'm sure you know people like that as well. And that's what I love. And it's like, yeah, you get a point where you're
I do think role-playing games are lame.
Well, I don't play them either, but I, to be truthful. But I'm not going to shit on somebody for doing it either. I mean, I would.
I would literally shit on someone for playing a role-playing game. If you have played a role-playing game...
You would drop your trowel right now?
Yeah, watch out for me at Comic-Con, because I will do that to you.
Hey, there's Robert Kirkman. Why is he squatting over that guy? Ew! Robert!
Yeah.
Ew, and on that scatological moment...
I really thought that this would be a bad word balloon interview just because I'm tired with the new baby and, you know...
We had fun.
Comic-Con fun, but, you know, when you can end on a joke about shitting on someone... I really don't think that, I don't think you can knock that. I think this is probably the best thing I've ever done.
We hit the high mark. No, that's good. No, it's good talking to you, man. And as we wrap up, as the plinking piano plays in the background, I bid adieu to Robert Kirkman.
Whatever.
Glad I was able to find this talk from 2009 with Robert Kirkman. I think some of the stuff he covered was very interesting. And it also was fun to see what ultimately became Guarding the Globe and some of the other ideas that he's been able to put in Invincible and Walking Dead. Not to mention what Robert has coming up. And I hope to follow up with him on a new talk in the weeks ahead. We talked briefly in San Diego about doing a word balloon. And certainly he has a lot of new stuff to talk about. Always glad to catch up with Robert Kirkman. That'll do it for this edition of Word Balloon. It was sponsored today by InStock Trades at InStockTrades.com, where you find a wide variety of your favorite books that are collected in trade paperbacks, hardcovers, absolute editions, omnibus editions, showcases, essentials, all at reduced prices of 35% or more off the standard retail price. And don't forget, if you have an order of $50 or more at InStockTrades.com, shipping is free. Lots of great Robert Kirkman product is represented at InStockTrades.com. Currently, Invincible Volume 13. The standard retail price is $16.99, but at InStockTrades.com, it is $10.70. All the Walking Dead trade paperbacks are under $10 at InStockTrades.com. The $12.99 books go for $8.18 at InStockTrades.com. The $14.99 trades go for $9.44. So great values waiting for you, all written by Robert Kirkman at InStockTrades.com. John Sumter saying thanks again for listening. Don't forget, more episodes of Word Balloon are waiting for you at wordballoon.com. Every Tuesday, you'll find a new episode of Word Balloon also at iFanboy. And subscribe to our feed at iTunes. Don't forget, we have a new spinoff show producing the Aw Yeah podcast with Art Baltazar and Franco. The Tiny Titans team makes you laugh every week with new shows. Make sure you check those new shows out at awyeah.libsyn.com. And if you go to wordballoon.com, the latest episode is right there on the front page. Questions or comments about the show, you can reach me via email, john@wordballoon.com. Follow me on Twitter under John Word Balloon, or you can ask me a question via Facebook under my name, John Suntress. Until next time, Word Balloon is a copyright feature of Shaky Productions, copyright 2010.